This is the Conorad Alert. Civil defense information will be broadcast at 640.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Y2K. How can we prepare?
Stop a few of their machines and radios. Throw them into darkness for a few hours.
We are fighting for our lives. My family must survive.
Over 5 years, 1,000 gallons of gas, air filtration, water filtration.
In 46 of Workshop Radio. And if you're wondering why the intro is just a little bit different, well, number one, I'm still sitting at Delinquent's Gully in a cabin with the rain coming down and the thunder booming outside. It's a great thing to be doing, but I wanted to play for you guys my presentation that I did at LFTN. This one, once again, was called Failure is Not an Option. You may have heard it from the Self-Reliance Festival recording, but most people like to hear it from each place. And the presentation varies from time to time. I had a great time doing it, but it's one of those times where as soon as I got up to start speaking, I ended up getting one of them stupid frogs in my throat. And once again, Porterhouse had to be my savior and bring me a bottle of water. And then Nicole brought me a little bit of tea with some mint and some other things in it, and it really did help. So I hope you guys enjoy this. And with that, let's leave the rain at Delinquent's Gully behind, and you can go back to a sunshiny, warm day under the Taj Mahaler at Nicole Sauce's Holler. Hey, you're doing great, remember, because I know you are. I see you kicking ass. I see you leaving your job because you're too successful in other areas of your life.
Well, I'm leaving my job because I'm not doing anything well.
Yeah, no, still, you're prioritizing. You're doing all right, so. I mean, it is, but it really isn't.
That's sort of how I roll.
Yeah.
Even if I kill myself.
It's kind of where we've been.
When are you going to defect?
I don't know. We'll see. If it was just based on pure politics, we'd be here already. But we got kids and potential for grandkids, you know, and 4 businesses that have to be run there. So none of that is conducive to just up and defecting, you know. So I don't know. I mean, realistically, as much as I love to say that we'd love to be down here full time, I could see us being snowbirds, you know, like that. So if you're from Florida, the snowbirds are the people that go down for, yeah. So we're allowed legally 6 months minus a day. That's what we're allowed to leave the country before it fucks up all our benefits and different things in Canada. So that's kind of where we're probably heading at some point. I'm quite impressed that she loves the property as much as she does, because it's still rugged, but now we have an actual mattress in there, so that's something. And yeah, it is nice. It's better than the bedroll I've been sleeping on for the first week I was there. Yeah, no, I'm too old and just stiff to sleep on a bedroll. So yeah, I do it when I'm, so like, I don't know, do you ever see the tent I have on the back of my camp truck sometimes? So I have it doesn't matter, it's like a box tent that goes over. So yeah, so when I go to like prepper camp and stuff, that's what I sleep in, and it's not bad for a couple of nights, but when it's indefinite, it becomes old pretty quick. You're like, yeah, so. I drive normally. I love to drive. So, but I think if I want to spend more time down here, it's going to have to start me flying a little more often. So we might pick up an old beater truck that we can put in storage near the airport, and that'll, because I mean, traveling is 3 days each way when I drive. So that's a week right there, really, when you figure it out. So
why don't you leave it at somebody's house that goes close to the
house? I probably could.
Like Nicole or me. I'm in Dixon.
Oh, but then I've got to get.
Then I can come and get you.
I know.
That's
true. I know. I just hate being beholden to anyone else. It's not that nobody wants to help. I 100% understand, and I will lean on people when I need to, you know, but I'm not saying I want to, but it'd be nice to have, you know, if I decide I want to fly down 7 times next year, I don't want to have to have somebody come pick me up. And I know they would. I know. That's just me.
So when you say storage, you're not talking about like at the airport?
No. We have a storage locker in Camden, and a lot of those places will let you park a vehicle at them for fairly cheap. So that's probably what we would do. Not in Camden, of course, somewhere near the, yeah. Something that's like a 10-minute cab ride or so. Who knows? I don't know. That's just what we're talking about if it gets to that. So, yeah. But yeah, every time I come down, I want to stay longer, and yeah, but I need to be home. We're going on, I don't know, By the time I get home, it'll be 2 months I've been on the road. So that's, yeah. Yeah, I've been, I think I left March 19th. So.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize you
came down here. Yeah. So I left a few days before Kentucky Sustainable. And so it was Kentucky and then SRF and then 2 weeks at my property and then here. And then, no, not this time. But I am going to Mountain Readiness in North Carolina next weekend. And then Illinois on our way home. We're doing one at, do you know Nate and Aaron, Two Chicks Homestead? You ever seen them? No. Good friends of mine. They're part of the community. So we do a get together there each year. So it'll be fun. Yeah, I'm looking forward. And I made a deal to myself and my family that no road trip in the fall because it's just, I mean, I can't do two-month road trips. I can't even, yeah, so. But we're going to fly down for SRF, and that'll be it, so. Are you in with Back to the Land? Is that their name? Or?
So, I'm not in with them. I'm okay. With
okay.
It, but
no, it's fine. They reached out to me about speaking, and I was like, nah, I'm obviously, I'm not going to be there. You know, I'm only coming to SRF this year for the fall, so.
It's really small.
Is it? I wondered
that,
so. Slink, slink, slink.
Pretty sure I wasn't supposed to do that.
How old is she?
Are you?
She's like eight.
What? You introducing me, or do you want me to introduce myself?
Okay.
I don't, yeah. Where we got? We got something dead
I
or
think,
not well, turned
I think
on?
It's muted.
That's all right.
I just want to make sure.
Oh yeah, it's muted. I wouldn't even have caught it.
Okay.
Test. Yeah, it's coming up a little bit. Is that okay? All right. As soon as I'm ready to start talking. Whoa. No.
I'm in the bathroom.
That's better. Okay. Karaoke echo is still on.
Karaoke?
Huh?
Did I miss karaoke?
I mean, it'll happen again tonight.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. We might get some live music if we're lucky, too, from Ani and Toby. Their guitars are right over there.
That might still be a little bit hot. I don't know. Anybody, is that too loud? So I'm just worried when I get on there that
I'll
I'm going
to... I'll dial it back when you
all right,
go there.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
My voice is feeling a little taxed from screaming at people all day.
That's okay.
Hi. Welcome to the afternoon of Living Free in Tennessee.
It's so fun to see how this workshop has changed since the first one, where we were slogging through mud. I think Tactical had to bring up 5 truckloads of wood chips here just so they could finish that aquaponics build, which is what we did at the first spring workshop. If you haven't checked that out, I can tell you how it works later today. Be happy to show you that. As far as coffee goes, which I'm sure is really important, the one with the upside down cup on it, you can take the cup off and use it if you want coffee. It's full, it's fresh. The cup doesn't need to be there. Okay, so this talk. This is one you all need to hear, especially those of you who are asking me how to get out of a situation where you thought you wanted to do something, you committed to it, you started doing it, and then in the middle of it you realize this is a terrible idea, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. It's also a really important one for you to hear if you're thinking about starting a business in the middle of starting something and kind of afraid to take the next step, because what if? It's also a really important one if you internalize heavily whenever you fail, it ruins the rest of your day. I'm talking to you, Dawn.
Yes,
she's like shrinking in her chair right now. It's okay, you're not the only one. I see other people shrinking. Tim is a dude who, one time he failed to have the courage to show up to his interview on my podcast.
Never let me live that down. But
no.
It's no, but it's a
story every single time.
100% true. 4.5 years
he
ago.
He scheduled his interview. Day of, he's like, something's come up. I can't be on the queue when he sent me that. What came up was chicken.
Yep.
And then he reached out a bit later, and he's like, hey, I have to admit, I did this thing. Could I be on your podcast after all? And I let him back on, because I'm sometimes not mean to people. Sometimes. And we had a great interview, and watching that change where I don't know what he needed to go through internally, to go from I'm kind of afraid to be on Living Free in Tennessee to I'm going to own the world of content and start hosting movie watching sessions and book clubs and Patch of the Month Club. And
it's true.
Yeah, all of the things. He's like, every time he's out, he's like, ooh, I can do more content, right? You'll see him running around with his camera and his Rode microphones. Like,
do my best.
You're recording this, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, I am.
Yeah. He doesn't want to wait for us to get him the audio. So it's been great to watch that. And one of the things he's had to get through was, how do you handle failure? What do you do with failure? What is the role of failure in your life? So I'm going to hand the mic to Tim and then turn him down so you can listen to him. Here you go. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Nicole. Huh. How's everybody now? See, I decided, how we doing? We good? Is that about right there? You get me? Yeah, yeah.
Not as loud as you think you are.
I know, that's the problem. And here's what I'm going to do. So get used to this. I'll try my damnedest not to. It's just what happened. So anybody here the first time? I don't think they're, yep, right. See, I just keep picking. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Anybody at Self-Reliance Festival not too long ago? How, just the most recent one. Okay. All right. So you can leave because you've already heard this.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, I know. That's what happens with me too. So I want to start. Well, you know what? I'm just going to share a little bit, because Nicole talked about the failure thing, and she talked about how, I don't know, Becky and I recently have been really dealing with the imposter syndrome again, because we've had, I know, Dawn's like, what, really? No, it's true. And it's happened. Let's roll back to last year. Right now I'm on a 2-month road trip, and so I'm almost done. And you would think, man, if you're on a 2-month road trip, you're going to be excited for everything you're doing, because you are far away from your family, and you are, you know, you must be here because you're passionate about it. Doesn't necessarily mean that. I remember last year heading to prepper camp. There's 1,000 people there, and I'm excited. I get to speak 3 times. I pulled over at a gas station about 30 minutes from prepper camp thinking, how do I get out of this? Right? I knew I wasn't going to, but I sat there and I had that internal dialogue again. So it happens. Just, I felt like I had to share it this morning or this afternoon or whatever, because that's where we're at. You know, it doesn't matter how much you think you get your shit all together. We don't. I can pretend, you know, Eric can get on and do his live stream, and people only get to see what they get to see about us. And hopefully you guys get to see who we are, you know, when we hang out at these places. And if you ever think that I'm not who you see me on as on YouTube, I want you to come by and give me a swift kick, you know where, because that's not me. I want to make sure that I get to come here and share with you guys. So we're going to talk today a little bit about failure not being an option. So I just joked with Ken, because failure really is an option, isn't it, Ken? But it's not. That's what it comes down to. So we've built a community. We call ourselves, well, my group is called The Workshop, and all the kids, cool kids, hang out there, and we call them the delinquents. I think Brian Alexovich picked that up, and it's somebody who likes to live outside the kind of confines of society. Not crazy-like, but just doesn't really like to get along with the rules so much. And where we all kind of hang out is the Telegram group, and that's where I end up getting a lot of my content ideas for some of these presentations. The last two, actually. So I woke up one morning, and there was a meme in there, and it was in Latin, and I didn't want to admit that I didn't know what it meant. So I thought, well, because, you know, I should be fluent in Latin, right, Nicole?
Yep.
Or German, or whatever else it is. So I said, I'm going to look this up, and it said, Memento Mori. I was like, that seems really nice. That seems kind of happy. So I look it up, and it says, everybody's going to die. Oh, all right. Or more loosely trained is, everybody's going to live and then die. Or everybody, your life's going to come to an end at a certain point. I thought, well, now, isn't that a damn nice way to start? You open it up, and there is your motivation for the day. Death's on your doorstep. I was like, okay, cool. Let's get going. And I'm one of those guys that, I'm going to try to pronounce this word, apothenia. Anybody ever heard that? So that is somebody who sees patterns maybe where there isn't, or just connections for some reason or another. The type of person that sees like the Virgin Mary in a piece of toast and sells it on eBay, you know, or, you know, a zoo up in the clouds, that type of thing. Yeah. See, you're that person, Nicole?
I admire them.
Oh yeah. It's not always me, but sometimes it is. So I go to my local hardware store. Becky knows how this works. I go in for either 5 minutes or 5 hours. There's no in between. I either go in, get what I need, and get back to work, or I go in and decide my day's over and I'm going to shoot the shit for the next 45 minutes, really, is what it is. So the guy that owns it, his name's Rod. He's a cool dude. I love him to death. And we get talking. I'm like, have you noticed lately how busy life has gotten and how fast it is? And he's like, yeah, just you wait till you get over 70. Because he's, you know, he's early 70s, getting ready to finally retire. And he pulls out a tape measure and he hands it to me. He says, Tim, you know what that is? I'm like, Or is this like a trick question? What are we doing here, guys? And he says, pull it out. Pull it out to about 75 inches. Okay, I can do that. So I pull it out to 75 inches. And he says, do you see that? Do you know what the average age is? Average lifespan is in Canada? He said, you know, it's like 76.4, but we'll call it 75. And he looked at that and he said, right there, pick where you're at in life. So for me, it was at the time 42. I was at 42 inches, which is well beyond kind of the mid-range. He said he's in his overtime at this point. So that tells you roughly how old he is. But that was a great illustration again of you're going to die. No, sorry, not that exactly. But that was the idea. There was this theme in the morning. That whole day was kind of a reminder of your mortality. Now, there's two ways I could have taken that for sure. And the first one absolutely was that. Let's be in a funk. Let's walk around for the rest of the day and think, well, I guess I've wasted those 42, 43 years, or I don't have time to build something great. I don't have time to become a contract lawyer. Where are you, Patricia? She's not here. That's okay. Yeah. I don't have time to change jobs, do I, Don? See? Yeah, he knew. Right. We don't. We think, oh, I don't have, or guess what else you get to do? You get to look at that and think, huh. Now, nobody has tomorrow guaranteed. We know that. But we also know the average is right there. And you can take that as a motivation. You can take that as a jump up, kick you in the ass and say, yeah, I'm going to do something. I have this much time, in theory, to build the absolute life I want to live. I got this much time to decide when I'm 40 that I'm going to be the biggest boss babe in the world and build a daycare empire. Right, Rebecca? Right? Yeah, there you go. No, no, you're good. That's okay. Yeah, so that was what was cool. You could look at that and you could wake up and you could see that meme and it says memento mori. And you're like, well, I guess I'm reminded of my own mortality, or I'm going to take that as the kick in the ass I need to get motivated and get at it. So here's the thing. You guys know Apollo 13, the mission? Anybody ever see the movie? Yep. It's slightly dramatized, so it's not perfect, but here's the deal. In that movie, what we find out is they have some technical difficulties. You've got, I can't remember the exact amount of people, but they're up in space and they end up getting lost in space. And it was one of the first movies I ever actually saw in theaters. So that kind of dates you a little bit. And that was back in the Tom Hanks Renaissance when he was winning all the Oscars and everybody was, you know. So in there's a great actor, Ed O'Neill. And you got to picture this because this is in either the 60s. I said Ed O'Neill. It's Ed Harris. Yes. I've done that twice now. So it was not the dude from Married with Children. It was the dude who is a very good military character actor. So let's go with that. So Ed Harris. And you go into this very typical 1970s cafeteria. There's more smoke in there than there is breathable air. You know how that is, right? You got everybody wearing white shirts with their sleeves rolled up. Everybody's sweating their balls off. And you can barely breathe because of the smoke. And they said, you know what? We're running out of power up there. We don't even know how to get the power to even think about starting to bring the guys back. Huh. So what do we do? And of course, you got all these government or NASA guys, you can call them what you want. And every one of them is just hollering to the top of their lungs, we can't do it, we can't do it. There's no way we're going to bring them home. And so Ed O'Neill, Ed Harris, in his infinite wisdom and his great acting capabilities, kind of rolls up his sleeve, takes a big drag off his cigarette in the most 1970s way you can do it. He walks out of the room and he says, gentlemen, we've never lost an American in space before. And he says, failure is not an option. Okay, you got all these people that are absolutely downtrodden thinking they can't do it. He's like, we're going to motivate them. Failure is not an option. Now, here's the deal. That line never actually happened in real life. The concept is great, but it was cinematic. So I want you to remember that as we go along. Failure is absolutely not an option. All right, so where do we go? What is it in your life that you would do if failure wasn't an option? Somebody tell me. Would it be film the next Evil Dead? Just asking. Yeah, would it be live in a bus and drive around the countryside and do people's intros and outros for their YouTube channel and be independent? What would it be? Would it be switch your jobs because you weren't enjoying it anymore? I'm just looking at you. I'm not saying who it is. I'm just saying, what would you do if failure wasn't an option? I need to hear from somebody. I'm not moving on until somebody tells me. What is it you want to do right now that you're like, I don't know. What am I going to do? How about you, Ken?
Good question.
build an independent business, which you kind of have. Turn your kind of male inspiration business into a full-time gig.
That sounds so weird.
I know, it did sound funny. I was trying to find the right words and they weren't coming, right? Again,
more full-time with that.
Yeah, more full-time. Absolutely, I love it. How about you, Nicole?
Swim spa.
Swim spa. We were talking about your swim spa the other day.
Selfish, but yeah, swim
no, but is it going to make your life better?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, fuck it then, do it. Just say it. So how do we decide? Where do we go? How do we decide what we need to do to build the thing that we want to build? How do we do it? Well, there's this good YouTuber I really like. His name's Film Booth. And he puts some of, well, it's not his name, of course, but it's his channel's name. He puts some of the best kind of typed up content, you know, on the community page of YouTube. And you can go in there and they'll have pictures and different things. Well, he put some stuff on there. And one was one of the best I've ever heard of. It was, how do you decide what to do in the morning? And he said, you've set yourself a goal in life. You know what it is you want to do. You know what yours is. You know what yours is. You know what yours is. So you ask yourself in the morning, the next thing I'm going to do, is it going to help my goal? Is it going to help my end goal of getting a swim spa? And of course, if the answer is no, we what? Don't do it, right? Okay. But this is where it gets kind of hairy. If the answer is, I don't know, it might be helpful. Do you think we do it? No, we don't do it. That's the cool thing. How about, you know, it might be, it's really close, it might be kind of helpful. We don't do it. The only time you do something is if it's a resounding yes for the goal that you want to set, the goal that you want to accomplish. I'm not saying I'm perfect at it, not by any means, but it has certainly helped me reframe just a little bit on how I decide in the morning what to do. I think it helps you too a little bit, doesn't it, hon? Just a bit. She's shaking her head yes for those on the that can't quite see. So where do we start? Eric, earlier today, you talked about YouTube being a long-term process, right? Could we call it a grind?
Depends on how you view the
yeah. Grind doesn't have to be a bad thing,
right.
But there's going to come a time when you're going to wake up and you're going to be excited to start whatever this new thing is. And it's going to be good for 2 or 3 days or 3 or 4 weeks. And then you're going to get home and your dog's going to get sick. It's going to be raining outside. You know, you're going to be lazy that day and you're going to say, I don't want to do it. I'm going to use the YouTube channel as an absolute example for me. The big one was you just have to commit to it. And you know, when you put a knife, Patrick will hate to say this, but you put a knife on a grinder and the first thing happens, it heats up. And the second thing is it takes material off. It hurts. It hurts the knife a little bit. It makes it better, but as long as you don't do it the wrong way, it's still a little bit painful for it. And that's the thing about the grind. Embracing the grind. And that is the thing, I think, and I really should move this to the end of the presentation at some point, because I think that's the thing that most folks are missing today. Most people think, I want success, I need to find success, and I want it today. The only way you're going to find the success is embracing the grind. And it could take 2 years, it could take 5 years, it could take 40 years, but you got to commit to being the sunshine prepper every Thursday for years. You know that, right? And it's okay. She's nodding her head. But it's true. I look at a guy like Art Bell. You guys, anybody know Art Bell? He's long passed, but you still know his name, don't you? That dude was the epitome of embracing the grind. No matter where you stood on what he thought. I mean, he started out as a military reporter overseas, and then he did political stuff, and nobody knew his name. And he did that for almost 30 years. Before he ended up on the format that made a national name for him, Coast to Coast, to the point where people still talk about him and they enjoy his old shows better than they like George Snorri nowadays doing the same show. So that's what you have to do. If you want to build the life you want to live, if you want to do something absolutely great, you got to embrace the grind. All right, so last year at the Self-Reliance Festival in the fall, this is what, afterwards, we had about a 4-day drive home, and Becky and I did what we do best. I drive, and she sleeps, and that's okay. Somebody else is laughing. That makes me happy. There's nothing wrong with that, because like Eric said, when he left Self-Reliance a couple of years ago, that's when your brain starts doing the work, and my brain was just going a mile a minute, and I decided, in my infinite wisdom, after listening to Arnold, you guys know Arnold Schwarzenegger? He did a great book called Be Useful. And I decided to download it before I hit the trip home. And then I realized Arnold's the one that's narrating the book. I thought this could be really bad. But it actually wasn't. It was great. Sorry, guys. And in there, the reporters asked him, they said, Arnold, you're always smiling. You're getting beat up. Your muscles are ripping and repairing, and you're doing the reps over and over again. Why are you smiling? Nobody else is smiling. And he says, because I know when it hurts, it's working. When it burns, that's when I'm having success. I'm the only one that's going to smile. And he made himself smile. So I decided one of the things I was going to try to do when I got back after SRF was get a little bit healthier. And so there was something I tried 10 years ago that I failed miserably at, and that was called a coach to 5K. So you go from eating Doritos, sitting on the coach, to running a 5K. And you don't do it in one day, of course. You're supposed to do it in about 10 weeks. So I started 10 years ago, just before Becky came out to Alberta with me, and I made it 2 sessions, and I gave up. So I decided this time I was going to do it. And when I first started, maybe 45 seconds, maybe a minute I could run, and that was the end of it. I was done. I was absolutely beat. And so it would gradually get you further and further and further along. And so I decided I'm going to embrace the grind. Did I hit it every day? I didn't, but I did pretty good. Excuse me, guys. I don't know what hit me.
Your water.
Yeah. Eric's my water man. Yeah, I could use one. Thanks, brother. I appreciate that. That's perfect. Anyway, so I decided I was going to do it. And it's supposed to be about a 9-week program. It took me 11 weeks. And there were times when I would run and I'd be feeling it. I'd just be like, I'm absolutely miserable. And thank you. But I was running in the middle of winter and I was upstairs at the arena. And I'd go by and there's these windows. It'd be dark in the morning and I'd look at myself and I'd look miserable and I'd force myself to smile. It's like, I'm going to smile. I'm going to do it. I even recorded the last minute of my run when I did the first 5K. And I fucking loved it. I did. Until I tore something behind my Achilles tendon. It's not a big deal. I'll get it fixed at some point. But I did it. I stuck with it. Took me 10 years to do it. But I embraced the grind because I told myself I was going to do it. Thank you, Eric. If you guys knew the story about the water behind. That's almost how we met the first time, wasn't it? Let's go back to 1997. I was a 15-year-old wet behind the ears kind of guy. And I worked at the local library. I actually taught almost my entire town how to use the internet because most people thought the information superhighway was some kind of new road they were going to get to drive on. So they would come in. Anyway. But what's that? Ba-da-bum-tsh. Thank you. There we go. So I worked at, well, didn't have a name when I started. And one day I walked in and they had these big streamers and everything up. And they had a new sign up and they had a flag or a curtain in front of it. So I go out. And we're having tea and coffee and donuts, and they're going to unveil the name of the new library. And it drops down, and it says Isaiah W. Wilson Memorial Library. I didn't have a clue who that was. I was like, this is strange. They named it after a guy. So Isaiah W. Wilson from my hometown, a tiny little town in Nova Scotia that really most people wouldn't even know existed. He started out selling farmer's almanacs. You guys mostly know what those are, right? So back in the day, in the late 1800s, he would walk around to sell these. He would go 50 miles to sell them. And what ended up happening was, when he'd go to sell a farmer's almanac to a little old lady, she would say, come on in, let's talk, you know. But that was my best old lady voice there. And so she'd call them in and they would talk about the family. And what he ended up finding out was, people didn't travel a lot then. And they would share their stories. And he would take their stories and he would write them down. And he would kind of... He started forming kind of the idea of the genealogy of our hometown. It was kind of cool. So eventually he'd sold Farmer's Almanac to just about everybody in the town that he could walk to and talk to. And one day somebody asked them, have you ever gone to the provincial archives in Halifax? And he said, I hadn't. They go, we'll pay you to go. And now you need to understand that he had no transportation. They were 150 miles away. So he had to walk the 150 miles. And so he said, how much will you pay me? A dollar. He took a dollar to walk 150 miles up, look through the musty, dirty, dusty, old archives, write things down, and then he'd 3 or 4 day walk back or whatever it happened to be. This dude was passionate about learning the history of that. I mean, how many times do you think he was walking along those railroad tracks? The rain was falling on his face and he's thinking, why in the hell am I doing this? And for the record, just so you know, a dollar at that time is worth about $35 today. So he wasn't making bank doing it. That was his passion. He decided that every time he put one foot in front of the other, he was going to go to Halifax, he was going to dig through the archives, he was going to eventually write the book, The Archive, The Genealogy and History of Digby County. Now that might not mean much to you, but everybody in my town used that as the kind of history that they based their genealogy on. He's still remembered in our town to this day, 100 years after he died, simply because he embraced the grind, he took the steps, he walked all that he walked, and that was his passion. He decided to live that way. Now, that might not be important to some people, but it was important to him. That's what got him out of bed in the morning. I apologize, guys. Sorry. Not sure what happened there. Let's try not to do that into the mic too often. All right, so one of the things that I ended up discovering along the way when we were starting to build the life we wanted to live was that people started setting goals, and they would treat them like New Year's resolutions. Anybody in here set a New Year's resolution this year? Anybody ever break a New Year's resolution? Yeah, there you go. Me too. I worked with a guy named Mark at the hardware store many years ago. The dude quit smoking every year. Some years he would last 2 days. Some years he would last 22 days. Occasionally, he'd get a prescription from his doctor and last till April. But we all knew, unfortunately, that come June, he'd be smoking again. It was just as simple as that. Because he treated it as binary, zeros and ones. So he would say, well, I smoked, I guess I screwed up, I guess I'm gonna keep smoking, and then next year he would try it again. And that's how a lot of people look at success. They're like, okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna build my business. And the first time they have a little bit of setback, all right, I'm done. You know, how about you build a new business and you set a goal of 1,000 subscribers to your YouTube channel and you set that goal for a year. If you do it for a year and you only make it to 700 subscribers, are you going to quit and call it a day? No. But a lot of people do. They set these artificial goals and they think, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to set a goal, and if I don't get to this point, well, I'll give up, you know? Or better yet, they decide it's time to get healthy, and then they accidentally find themselves at an all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, they fall down, they stand up, and there's a cake in their mouth, right? Or you go to the bar and the bartender gives you whiskey instead of water, accidentally on purpose, right? It's what happens. The first time we fuck up, we're like, I guess I'll give up. But that's not how success works, because so many people decide to choose the failure option, right? That's what they decide to do. But it's only failure if you give up permanently. It's only failure if you say, I'm walking away, I'm not going to make my first $1 million, John Pugliano, and I'm going to walk away and never do it again. Simple as that, right? That's what it is. And so many people treat it as a New Year's resolution. Treat it as something you're working toward, because you're always going to set new goals. You're always going to try to do a little bit better. Now, here's something I've changed over the years, something I learned actually from John Willis. 2 years ago, right now, just before this, Becky and I were sitting on the beach in Daytona. And Nicole asked me if I wanted to do a live stream with her and John Willis. And we were talking during that show, and they kind of asked me to share my story. And we said, yeah, the big thing for us is, anybody asks me, how do I build a business? How do I do it? Well, the first thing is, you need to start a side hustle really slow and let it build up and save a whole bunch of money. And then once you have all the money you need, then you can tell your boss to take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more. But the problem is I never did that. Nobody ever does that. At least most of the successful people I know. There's a few that do, I'm sure. But most people burn the damn bridges. Twice in my life, I walked away from a job with zero notice, didn't I, honey? Didn't always work out for us, did it? But that's how we found success in business. So here's the thing. I used to say, you know, build slow, and then get there. But we're all adults here, right? There's no kids, at least not for the most part. The big thing is that you're an adult, you get to make up your own mind. And what I can tell you, what's worked for me, what's worked for Nicole, what's worked for John Willis, what's worked for most people that I know that are successful, is at one point they decided they weren't going to have a plan B. They were only going to have a plan A. And that plan A is success. Now, the thing is, don't be a lemming. Anybody remember those video games, the Lemmings video games? And what would they do? They just walk in one direction until they hit a wall, right? They wouldn't adjust. They wouldn't see something coming in. And so whatever the goal happens to be that you set, here's the deal. It might change a little bit as you go along. You don't have to blindly follow something straight off a cliff like a lemming. I tell you, no plan B, simply plan A. But as you go along, your definition of success is going to change. When I first started my handyman business, my definition of success was getting a job cleaning up dog shit for an hour, and I'd make $80, and I spent an hour, made $80, and got to listen to a podcast. That was my definition of success. Now, my wife's definition of success is a little bit bigger. At this point, it includes three daycare locations and maybe a couple of more, doesn't it? But the thing is, both of those were success. We both knew we were ready to improve our life. And at each different station in life, we went a little bit further. You guys have heard the story, burn the bridges, or the phrase, burn the bridges, burn the boats. I got to tell you, a lot of times, with no plan B, that's what requires. There's a country song right now where the guy says he throws a match and he's standing on the bridges, it's burning behind him, and I'm not sure which one it is. But that phrase came from a Spanish explorer who wanted to go in and steal the Mayan gold, basically. And they'd been on the water for quite some time. And what ends up happening with sailors when they're on a boat for a long time, not that, I don't know what you guys were thinking, they get kind of pissed off at the captain. That's what happens, right? You know what it's like. You work at a job long enough, you just kind of don't like the boss anymore, right? So he knew his guys were like ready to mutiny. And the gossip on the boat was, we're going to throw him overboard. And, you know, so he knew if he was going to succeed, if he was going to walk the 200 miles inland once they landed, if they were going to rile up the city, steal their gold and come back, the only way he was going to do it was to literally burn the boats. So he ordered all the boats scuttled on the rocks, lit a fire and burnt. So there he was standing on the beach, deciding, we've got all my men. I guess the only way we're getting home is if we walk 200 miles, we steal their gold, and then we come back and steal all their boats. That was it. They burnt the bridges. They burnt their boats. They decided, I have no other recourse but to succeed. Because, again, John Willis, good buddy of mine, he says, if you have an escape plan or if you have a route of egress, you're going to take it. Because once times get really, really tough, you're going to say, you know what? I don't think I want to do it. But when your bills are required to be paid because of a business, when you have a bunch of people on the payroll and you have to make sure that they get paid, you're going to figure out a way to make it work. Simple as that. That's what it's all about. And sometimes that's the motivation we need. I like to be all, you know, kind of fairy tale and unicorn farts and all that and be real happy about it and tell you, no, it's okay. Start slow. Do it the right way. Do it the way that all the experts say. But the problem is all the experts are telling you something they didn't do themselves. We didn't do it ourselves. We didn't sit there and build a slow. The only one I know who did it was Jack Spirko. He built it really slow. And Nicole said that too, but it's true. He's the only guy I know. Everybody
burn
else.
The bridges.
Right. Burn the damn bridges, you know, whatever it takes. Set the charges at the base, walk back with the old Acme TNT plunger and blow it the hell up. And then you get to do the cool guy, 1990s. Action star walking away as things blow up behind you. It's going to look cool for a minute and then you're going to lose motivation. But you're going to know, if I don't figure out a way to succeed, I'm going to drop dead trying to climb that ravine I just made behind me. That's what it is. Burn the bridges, burn the boats. All right, here's the thing. Oh, okay, no, we're good. How are we doing for time out there anyway, just so we know? Anybody?
15 minutes.
See, I always go way longer than I plan.
Half an hour.
Oh, half an hour. Okay. All right, so we're going to
be careful of the leaves. But that'll help with your...
Oh, thank you. Let's try to do this and see where we end up. Anyway, we're going to skip by this part here for you guys. So, sometimes we got to pivot. Whatever your desire, whatever your... I guess when we had Ken on the accelerator program, you talked about... I think what we kind of talked about was your idea was maybe a little too broad at the time, wasn't it? You thought, I know what I want to do, but I'm doing too much of it, or I'm trying to do too much. The plan A, plan B, no plan B, but sometimes, excuse me, we have to pivot. Simple as that. And what exactly does that mean? Well, some of the biggest companies out there have done that. Starbucks started out selling whole beans and coffee grinders, but they discovered there's way more money in selling the end product to people. That way you get to sell them a Venti Grande, something or other for $18 with a smile on their face, and people leave and say, that's the worst coffee I ever had, and they come back tomorrow and buy another one for $18. Because they pivot it. You guys know Nintendo? Started out selling sewing machines and then playing cards. But we don't know them for that, right? I know. Twitter started out as a podcast creator. So it was a place where you could go to get all your podcasts. I don't think it's that now. It's everything but that at this point. Suzuki started out selling weaving looms. What do you think they'd do if they were still selling weaving looms today? I don't think they'd be in business, would they? So the idea is, we know we want success, but you're not going to know what the end product is when you start. You're going to start out selling weaving looms, and eventually you're going to sell really loud cars and really cool motorcycles, because that's where you ended up making the money. So you're going to have a plan, you're going to burn your bridges, and then you're going to pivot as you go along. Because someday you're going to think you had it all figured out, and you don't. I'll tell you an uncomfortable story, because those are always fun. Maybe three weeks ago, I'd been working on getting a guest on the show for a long time. A guy that not everybody knows, but some people would know. Do you guys know the Mighty Mighty Bosstones? Anybody? Yeah. Okay. Well, the lead singer of the Mighty Mighty Bosstones got kicked out of his band after 25 years because he refused a certain medical treatment during a certain time that will remain nameless. We can talk about it, but I'm not going to, because it's more fun that way. He left his band. He lost his job on Jimmy Kimmel. And a whole bunch of other guys lost their job from their bands at the same time. So, Dickie is his name. He's the lead singer of a new band called The Defiant. And I had been reaching out to him for ages. And he's a big deal, at least in my mind he is, and I really wanted to talk to him. And so I'd been talking to his representatives. Finally, I get an email around midnight one night. Dickie will come on your show tomorrow. None of this. What day can we have him on? What day, you know? It was tomorrow at noon, if you'll do it. And I'm like, yeah, I'll do it. Except I misread the email, and I thought, I didn't read it till the morning, thinking it was the next day. So I started out on a drive. I get the email, are we still good to go for 3 hours from now? Yes, we are. Okay. So I bring him back. I come back to the hotel, and I do everything I can. I send out emails to all my friends, promote this. We got 3 hours. I put together the best interview that I could totally put together. I was as ready as I could be in 3 hours to interview somebody I've been trying to get for 6 months. We sit down, the dude logs in, Dickie Barrett logs in on his phone, and he looks like an old man trying to use a cell phone. It's not a bad thing at all. It wasn't his fault, but he was having all kinds of technical problems. I got to talk to him for about 45 seconds until he said, this isn't working, we need to reschedule. And he hangs up, and that was it. And that felt like the biggest failure in the world. I was like, son of a bitch, I've worked so hard. I put all that work in that morning. And you know what I realized? It's not my fault, but how you react to something like that's your fault. I think I might have thrown something across the room. I think it was just my shirt at the time, but it was still enough to make me a little bit pissed. I wallowed in self-pity for 5-10 minutes, and then I realized I got to figure out a better way to do this. So what did I do? I decided I'm going to pivot. So now, when there's somebody I'm really excited to interview, even though I've done live interviews my entire podcasting career, I have decided I'm going to pre-record some of these interviews. It removes a lot of the moving pieces. And it's a way for me to pivot, still go after guests that I want to go after, but eliminate all of these other moving parts that could have made things like this. It sucked. You know, I still have a live on there of like 45 seconds of Dickie going like this. Ah, this doesn't work. Call me back. So that was the end of it. And I will. I will keep reaching out. I'll get him there. He gave me his number so I can text the dude, which is kind of cool. So we're going to make it work. But it felt like a huge failure at the time. It was something I had to pivot. So there's going to be a day when that's going to happen, I promise. I don't know where AJ is. AJ, I think he's over there working, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in the camper.
Anybody talk to AJ about his bone broth business, his freeze drying? I mean, the dude has got it going on. There he is right there. He can hear me. Yes. I don't think I've ever met somebody that had more confidence that he was going to succeed. And that's cool. I'm glad. But I want to tell you, there's going to come a day when AJ's going to wake up and he's either going to be a little bit discouraged. It's just going to be a shitty day in business. And I bet you've had them before, haven't you, AJ? Yeah. But that's okay, because you're going to keep going, aren't you?
Tomorrow's a different day.
Right. And that's what it is. You're going to have a day. I don't think I've ever met somebody more excited about starting a new business, more motivating. Being around him makes me want to be a harder worker. But he's still going to have a shitty day. He's still going to have to pivot just a little bit in his business simply because he knows that's the price of success, right?
Yeah.
And he's done it before. And as we get older, we realize that we just have to keep going, don't we? But it's true. Simple as that. That's the idea of pivoting. All right. So how do we get successful? How do we do it? Another thing is to create urgency. Because Nicole, she's got her book coming out, shameless plug, My Three Things. That's a great way of creating urgency. For me, for a long time, I've done a 1-3-5, where I put the most important thing, the next three, and five after. No matter what you do, that's an idea of creating urgency. Because Again, if you've got a great idea for a business and you know part of my business is I need to reach out to 20 potential clients every single day, there's going to come a day when some little fire is going to be burning and you got to run and put that out. And you're going to say, well, I guess I'll just leave those 20 clients, 20 potential clients for something else. I'll get to it tomorrow. I'll get to it tomorrow because they're not urgent, right? That urgent thing is the thing that always gets you the attention. You know, somebody hollering at you, Nicole, we need to move the shade cloth around. We got to get it done, right? Maybe it is important. Maybe it isn't, but it's the thing people are hollering at you. It's the thing that needs its attention. That's the thing you're going to do, right? So how do we create urgency? Well, the biggest thing for me is if I know what I need to do to build something great every day, I try my damnedest to do it first thing in the morning. Because once it's done, it's done. But if you let yourself get busy with the day, you forget to call 20 potential clients. You forget to reach out to 7 potential podcast guests. You forget to learn a new skill on YouTube. So start it early in the morning. That's what creates urgency. That's what allows you. You do the important things first. There's this old illustration that pastors used to love. And they'd go up on stage and they'd put the rocks in the jar and everybody say, is it full? No, it's not. Or they'd say it is full. And then he'd pour gravel in it. And they say, is it full? Yeah, it's full. And it's not, because then he'd pour sand in it. And by the third time, everybody'd say, well, is it full? And they'd say, yes, yeah. And well, no, actually they'd say no at that point. And then he'd take a glass of water and pour the water in too. So you'd get the big rocks, the little rocks, the sand and the water. You'd never get the rocks in, the big rocks, if you put the water, the sand, and the gravel in first, right? You're not going to get those important things. They might not seem urgent at the time, but if you don't do them first thing in the morning or do them when you need to, you're going to be 3 years down the road and you're going to be like, I'm still smoking or I'm still drinking because you didn't do the important or urgent thing first thing in the morning. So do your best to create urgency when you can. All right. So 1996, 95, I'm not sure what it was. I wake up in the morning and there is a little package under the Christmas tree that looks like the shape of a VHS tape. And it is. And in there, I open it up and it turns out it's the Apollo 13 VHS. So at some point over that Christmas break, I decide we're going to watch it. And that first scene that I talked about early in the presentation was all about, that's the one everybody remembers. Failure's not an option. But for some reason, there was another scene in that movie that has always stuck out with me. And I don't think I've watched it since 95, 96 on VHS in the living room with mom and dad. So in there, after they figure out the power problem, they discover we have a new problem. And in typical government fashion, you'll enjoy this as we go along, I promise. They discover that they don't have enough air filters on board. And they said, well, what about the air filters on the lander that's on the moon? Oh, they're perfectly fine. The problem is they're square and the ones on the craft in the air are circle. So leave it to the government to send up circle air filters and square air filters instead of making them universal, right? So they realize it doesn't matter how much power in the world they have, before these astronauts can get back on planet Earth, they're going to die because they're not going to have oxygen. They need to figure out a way to scrub all the junk out of the air and make it oxygen again. And again, what do you think they do? You got all these sweaty NASA scientists sitting around in the main cafeteria. We can't do it. What are we going to do? It's impossible. There's no way to hook this up. So again, in typical cinematic fashion, somebody comes in with a great big cardboard box. And what they had was an exact replica of that capsule in the other room where the astronauts would practice landing and that sort of thing. So a dude went in there and stripped out everything he could tear off. He put it all in a box and he threw it down on the table and he said, look, the solution's in there, find it. And they could have very easily looked at that pile of junk that doesn't even represent an empty box you'd see sitting behind a Goodwill. You know, the stuff that they won't even donate, they throw in the dumpster because they're so ashamed to sell it. That's what it looked like. So the guys start rummaging through. And eventually they end up making a solution. They use laminated index cards. They use garbage bags. They use dryer duct. They use duct tape, a whole bunch of things. And they end up fitting a square peg into a round hole. And the cool thing is you can still see that setup at one of the museums in Washington, D.C. to this day. Now, you can look at that big pile of junk and you got one of two options. Simple as that. You can look at it and say, that's the biggest pile of crap I've ever seen. Take it to the Goodwill. I ain't doing anything with it. Or you can look in that big pile of junk right there and you can say, honey, the money we need to make payroll this month is sitting in that pile of junk right there. Or the key to finding 1,000 subscribers to YouTube is in that pile of garbage bags and index cards and duct tape. It might look like garbage, but your solution's in there. You got two options. You get to decide, I'm going to give up, I'm going to quit, or I'm going to dive in head first. I'm going to build a legacy that's going to last as long as I absolutely can, and I'm going to figure out the solution. Now, again, we look at that. We're going to go back, and you remember when I go into the hardware store in the morning and we had that tape measure, and Rod says, look, 75 inches. Now, you can look at that and say, oh, you know, give or take, there might be, say, 20 inches left on there for somebody. And you can think, man, that's going to go really, really fast, isn't it? And it could. But what we're going to do is something we forget about on tape measures is we can zoom in on them infinitely, right? So instead of an inch, we're going to zoom in and we've got a 16th of an inch. We're going to go all the way down. We're going to break it up into 365 pieces. So all of a sudden, instead of there goes that inch, look at it as a piece of opportunity. Look at the next year as 1/365 of an inch. Every single day you wake up, you got 365 days to do exactly what you want, to build the life you absolutely want to live, and get the hell out of bed and be excited. Simple as that. So thanks, guys. I appreciate you. So I wanted to end a... What's that?
Shouldn't that be centimeters?
I don't... What's a centimeter? I don't know.
What do you do with inches?
I have no idea. What's a centimeter? Are you crazy? So I wanted to end a little early today, just in case anybody wanted a few questions. I thought it'd be kind of fun to have a quick back and forth session. If you want, if anybody has any questions on, and you, we can go into content creation, we can go into building a business, the handyman end of things. Even my wife can answer a couple questions on a daycare system. But yeah, if anybody's got anything, throw them up at me. And if not, we'll end up a little early for you. So I'm going to grab some tea here right quick. Everybody's so quiet.
Stoic